Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur. Episode 34, recorded Monday, November 14th, 2011. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. And by Ford, featuring Wi-Fi connectivity with available sync and My Ford Touch. Now your car can be a Wi-Fi hotspot. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at ford.com/technology. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 20% off your new account for 6 months, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR11. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. It is episode 34, and from Petaluma's TWiT World Headquarters in Petaluma, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. I'm back home in my basement, my little studio in the basement in Toronto. So not stuck on a conference floor somewhere, not stuck in an airport or a hotel room. I'm back at home.
You're back at home. That's always nice. You're in a familiar place. Welcome home.
Thank you very much, Sarah. It's nice. It's good to be in a place where you don't anticipate too many technical problems because it gets a little risque out there in the real world, Sarah, when you're relying on Wi-Fi and other random things.
You know, it's true. I haven't even told you this yet, but I'm planning to be in Barcelona for one of our Social Hour episodes. And I figure it'll just be the evening rather than morning for me, but I fully plan to be able to remote in. But you never know with Wi-Fi. So it's like one of those things where I'll have to do a test beforehand. And if it's subpar, I'll have to figure out what my plan B is. That's just sort of the way that we have
to roll. When are you going?
Well, so I'll be at Le Web the first week of December. And then, so that's, we'll be there for TWiT. Yep. And then MG and I have just decided to stay a little bit longer. And we thought, well, if we keep heading south, it might keep getting warmer. Because Paris was really cold last week. So yeah, it's lots of details to be worked out. But I figure, hey, it'll be fun. I'll be able to, I'll be playing the role of Amber, Skyping in.
And I'll be following you on Trippy.
Exactly, on Trippy. Oh, and there's another one called GoGoBot now that we'll have to talk about that on a future show because I'm just starting to get the hang of it. But there are all sorts of resources right now when you're planning a trip, getting advice from people. Where have you been? Where should I go? It's awesome.
It's easier than ever, really, right? It's amazing. You can get so many different reviews and recommendations from people. I do like Trippy a lot. I'm not planning any trips, but I have been following other people's trips, and it's fun just to check out where people are planning on going and see if you can add any value to their planning.
Yeah, in fact, Kevin Rose, a friend of the show, went on a trip to Maui recently, and he had asked on Trippy, and it ended up on my Facebook feed, what should I do? And I was actually in Maui earlier this year for the first time, so it's like I feel like I went through the process of figuring out all the best places to go in a limited amount of time, but without a tool like this. So it was fun to see what people were recommending. And if I agreed with them, I'd say, oh, yeah, I really liked that place too. Or, I'm not sure if it's really what you're looking for and so on. But I like that too. Even if I'm not actually going on a trip, it's fun to sort of live vicariously and then get tips for future vacations.
Maui is awesome too. I've only been there once, but I absolutely loved it. It's so beautiful.
It's a pretty great place. That is for sure. All right, so let's get into our top stories of the week. The first story, it's funny. All weekend, I've had this issue with my Facebook news feed where sometimes you get a cluster of what people are reading via social apps, like the Financial Times, for example, or the Washington Post or Yahoo News type of a thing. And Facebook will cluster them up at the top of your feed in a helpful way. But what has really bothered me is when then you try to read that article, Facebook tries to install that news organization's app And I just don't really like installing apps unless I specifically want to, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's really been bothering me, and it's weird. Liz Gaines over at All Things D, it's as if she read my mind. She was obviously having kind of the same questions that I did, and she wrote an article that came across my my RSS reader this morning. Why is the Washington Post at the top of my Facebook feed yet again? And her article goes on to explain, you know, that she was confused because she kept trying to hide those sorts of posts, which Facebook is supposed to be very good at doing. If you don't want to see something like that at the top of your feed, you can unmark as a top story, you can hide. But what happens is that a lot of these articles, yeah, so what you should be able to do, Chad's, for anybody watching the video version of this right now, if you've got a Spotify app, which is showing me what Amber's listening to lately, and I just kind of go, you know, I don't really want to see this in my newsfeed. It's not really that relevant to me. I can go ahead and hide that stuff in my newsfeed. Well, why doesn't it work the same way with news? So Liz went ahead and asked the folks at Facebook, and what they told her was, for the most part, what you're looking at is an aggregated news list of what your friends have been reading. And because it's aggregated, which is some, it's like an algorithmic view that Facebook is putting together, they don't actually give you the opportunity to hide all aggregated news posts at this time. Doesn't mean that they will in the future. But if anyone has been having issues with that, that is part of the reason why. Now, Amber, is this something that you've come across? Because the news feed is, it's a strange and wondrous beast to me. I'm always trying to keep up with what they're changing.
Yeah, you know what? It was driving me crazy a few days ago because I kept noticing stories from the Washington Post within my newsfeed. Same thing that you had mentioned. Now, it was a specific article. It was about a plane that had crashed, and it was actually an old news item when that plane crash landed. I believe it was in Poland, which I think is a couple of weeks ago when that actually happened. But it just kind of freaked me out because it appeared that some of the articles that were kind of rising to the top there and that I would see when I checked out my newsfeed were actually, I don't want to say quite old, but in internet time, definitely a little bit old.
Right.
So it was a little jarring, kind of threw me off somewhat. So I hate the fact that you can't hide them. I've noticed it since, I guess, a few days ago, and I find it really frustrating that there's no way to properly just get rid of that. Because I don't really use Facebook like that. And so I find it a little bit intrusive to just have these articles kind of popping in.
I think, and this is something that apparently is new within Facebook, Chad, if you want to actually take my Facebook screen, because I'm logged in right now, you can go ahead and sort by highlighted stories or recent stories. And Amber, what you've probably got enabled is highlighted stories, which is when there's enough activity, those types of stories rise to the top, which is why you're seeing stories that aren't necessarily super new. You can switch to most recent stories, but then you miss out on a little bit of that Facebook trying to give you relevant news up at the top. I mean, it is up to you, but neither of them are perfect, I don't think. Now, of course, now I'm trying to find a Washington Post link so I can show you how annoying it is. And of course, now there's nothing up at the top because that's the way it works when you do live television. But as I'm looking for it, oh, come on, Washington Post. There were so many of you this morning. I'll find one eventually. Yeah, Facebook is, it's interesting too, because when I was trying to figure out, well, what's the difference between highlighted posts and new posts? It's just a little toggle that I hadn't even played around with at all. And when I went to switch over to recent posts just to see how the content changed, it apparently was a new feature, something that I had never enabled before. I don't know when it was switched live. If this is something that's a well-known thing, it didn't really cross my radar. And it's sort of like at least a part-time job to keep up on what Facebook changes behind the scenes.
At least a part-time job. They're always changing different things. It gets a little bit frustrating, I think, when you're trying to navigate through your own news feed and what people are posting there. So hopefully maybe they can just chill out for a while, maybe go on a vacation for a month and just leave things as they are. Although I will say, today I was noticing they had made big improvements to their help center within Facebook. So that's an area you can go to manage your privacy, get more information if parents are worried about things like online bullying. So there are some areas where they've definitely improved a lot, but it seems as though they just can't stop tweaking.
Yeah.
It's endless.
Well, and it's that's sort of the evolution of Facebook, is the more tweaking, the better, because they'll... Okay, here we go. All right, here we go. Ron read 9 articles. This is my friend, Ron Golden, who lives in New York. Okay, so here, hopefully he doesn't mind me joining his Facebook page. Okay, so here's what I'm talking about. Lots of Washington Post links. Okay, well, that's fine on its own. He can like whatever he wants. So let's say that I want to read... Second Quake Jolt San Francisco Bay Area. Ooh, yeah, that sounds like something that's relevant to me. So I go ahead and click it, thinking I'm about to read this article from the Washington Post, but that's not what I get at all. I get a, do you want to install the Washington Post social reader? Add it to Facebook, and then you too can read the story. Now, what people don't know, and I didn't realize until I read Liz Gaines' article, is that this actually does not force me to install the app, because what I was doing is at this point I'd say, just never mind, I don't want to read it that badly. But if I go ahead and press cancel on this reader page, it will then take me to the article. So I'm not actually held hostage, but that's really unclear. And that is, yeah, and then you sort of get this like sort of weird redirect. So you get there eventually. You do get to the article that you were looking for, and it's loading really, really slowly. But I feel that it's somewhat manipulative within Facebook, the way that I get there. So that's just my little rant for now. You've got options, but maybe if that was something that was bothering you, it's a little bit clearer why things are happening the way that they're happening.
You're not alone, basically. That's what we're here to tell you. You're not alone. We are also experiencing this. Now, Sarah, one story that has been making headlines everywhere in the social media world is about Ashton Kutcher saying that he would no longer be tweeting because of a tweet he sent out last week. The story keeps getting more interesting all the time.
It does, and I feel... It's like, it's so uncomfortable that I'm always reluctant to talk about these sorts of stories, because I think that, so if for whatever reason you are totally unfamiliar with what we're talking about, there is quite a scandal going on from within Penn State right now. We don't have to get into all of the details of that, but in essence, Ashton Kutcher, having been a fan of Penn State coach Joe Paterno, had tweeted out something in his defense that was regarding his termination. Basically said, why would they fire this guy? He's great. Okay, well, for anybody who's familiar with the backstory, that upset a lot of people, and it really just highlighted why sometimes it's really easy for somebody who doesn't know the facts of a particular case, not looking at trending topics, not reading the news for however long of time, to tweet out something and then look and feel really, really foolish later. I have done this, not about this particular topic, but I'm certainly guilty of this. I think that we can all probably think of a couple of times where we sent out cringe-worthy tweets because we just didn't have all of the facts ahead of time. This just happens to be somebody who has, 8 million Twitter followers, so reaches a lot of people, and happens to be a celebrity, and, upsets a lot of people because it's easy to say, how could you be so foolish? How could you be so careless? Aren't you reading the news? Well, that doesn't always happen, but it sheds a lot of light on why it's really important to know what you're talking about before you weigh in on a controversial subject.
Yeah, and I think stories like this happen fairly regularly when people are sort of walking around with their mobile phones. They're not sitting at a computer, because I think the tendency is when you're sitting at a computer, and I know I've done this, if I'm about to tweet something that may be slightly controversial, I really love to know the whole story. So I'll go on my computer and open up a browser and search around for more details. But there is a tendency when you're walking around with your mobile phone, which seems like this is what happened with Ashton Kutcher. He saw the headline on a TV that was in a restaurant or a storefront, and he tweeted just spontaneously. And we all know that tends to get people into trouble, like you said, if they don't actually read more about it. Now, the interesting follow-up to this story is that Ashton Kutcher admitted that he had made a mistake, and he posted this apology, and he also said he was going to be taking a break from Twitter for a while and handing over the account to his manager. Now, that hasn't really happened, Sarah. He was tweeting pretty soon after this all went down.
Although he has, if you look at his feed now, by the way, the tweet in question was deleted almost immediately, so it's not something that you can actually see on his feed now, but it's pretty much in every article that is discussing this. But yeah, I mean, he apologized. He said, as of immediately, I will stop tweeting until I find a way to properly manage this feed. I feel awful. It won't happen again. posted something else on Twitter management. And yeah, it's sort of, I'm not sure. I mean, he obviously didn't stop tweeting. The word about whether or not PR machines should be handling social networks for people who have this much reach is also controversial. I mean, some of us, I'm in the position that no, that really should never happen. Not for an individual, maybe for a company, but I certainly wouldn't have an assistant doing anything in my personal voice. But maybe he doesn't feel like that's safe enough. It's a tough situation, and you know, hey, this is a mistake. I think he's really sincere about feeling bad about it. I think, you know, sometimes I remember during the horrible earthquake and then tsunami in Japan that happened earlier this year. I mean, I was glued to Twitter with everyone else. And every once in a while, somebody would come through my news feed and say something that was like, just had nothing to do with any of this. And you think, where have they been? What are they doing? But you figure sometimes people are mobile or they just got off a plane or there's all sorts of reasons where you can seem like you're pretty clueless, but it's not coming from a bad place.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really a lesson for all of us, right? You always just have to be careful what you put out there. And if it's anything where you're taking a strong stance on a certain issue, it's worth just taking a couple minutes and researching that particular issue. Because there have been so many stories like this. And although for most of us, you know, it's not a big issue, for someone who has as many followers as Ashton Kutcher does, it will certainly get blown up quite quickly. So I think we can all take away from it that it's a lesson. And hopefully he keeps tweeting. I mean, he's been around for so long doing it, and obviously he's such a big fan of all these social sites.
Absolutely. All right. Well, quick reminder that if you're not watching us live, you should. It's fun. We record live on Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. But if you don't watch us live, that's okay too, because all of our shows live in perpetuity forever and ever at twit.tv/TSH. That's our show page where you can see all of our archives or listen. We have audio and video feeds, whatever is best for you. We embed the video right on all of our episode pages as well, if you prefer to watch that way. Subscribe in iTunes. We try to make it as easy as possible for you to join us, whether it can be live or after the fact. It's nice to be on demand, though, so if you miss a show, don't worry about it. We'll always have it up on our website for you. You can also email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, Amber. All right.
So next up, we have an article about the Amazon Kindle Fire, and a lot of people are ramping up to get their hands on one of these devices. I was pretty impressed when we first heard about this particular gadget coming out and being available. It looks really slick. I feel like, I don't know, Sarah, how you feel. I'm kind of in a position right now where I just feel overwhelmed with so many devices. I think that's why I tend to lean towards social media and apps, because it's just, it's not so much, so many things that I'm sort of feeling pressured to buy.
Yeah, so obviously I do a show about iPads. So I love my iPad. I spend a lot of time with the ecosystem. That said, I'm certainly interested in a worthy competitor to a tablet experience that I really like. And the Kindle Fire has gotten so much buzz. People have really been, hoping that it would finally be the competitor to end all competitors. What's kind of interesting is it ended up shipping a day early. So a lot of people have gone forward with their reviews. There was a particularly lengthy one over at Engadget by Tim Stevens, which he was really honest about it. I mean, his whole thing was, and people have been, some people are really disappointed with the Kindle Fire. Some people are not. I felt like it was somewhat squarely in the middle of the camp, saying it's not an iPad competitor, but it's also a lot cheaper, and it reflects that. And it's more of a, obviously, reading consumption device. There are good things about it. There are less good things about it. But it does seem that as the reviews start coming out and people are talking about it more and more socially, that there's like this group of people that are very annoyed that it is being compared to the iPad at all, because it's quite clearly not the same kind of a device. I guess it's, you know, it's really more of a Nook competitor, or even an iPod Touch competitor, larger one.
Yeah. I think people always have this opinion that there isn't room for more than one tablet, and I think that's entirely wrong. I mean, there definitely is room for people to want to have an iPad. It's a different type of device, and in some ways, I think the iPad, at least for families, you know, there's lots of great apps, and it's great for kids and grandparents, and really is something where you can kind of sit and surf really easily. And you're right. I mean, the Amazon Kindle Fire seems to be more about consuming content and reading books, and so I mean, it's just it's a specific preference. I think that depending on the type of gadget that you're looking for and the type of tablet you're looking for. But there certainly is room for other people in this space. It's not, I mean, it may be dominated by the iPad, but not necessarily exclusive for the iPad.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the holiday season goes with the Kindle Fire. I think they're going to sell a lot of units. I think that's a given. I think having the Amazon... I love using the word ecosystem, but I mean it's very much what Amazon is, especially with a device like this is very key. It sounds like the Android interface is a little meh for a lot of folks, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how we're talking about this come, let's say, January.
I was a little concerned. I read an article, I think it was somewhere today, where it had said that it's costing Amazon more to make the device than we're actually paying for it.
Yeah, in fact, some estimates are as high as losing $10 on each device. We don't know for sure if those numbers are correct. It sounds like they are losing money, though, and that's something that on the surface can seem like, why would they do that? That's so foolish. But then again, think of how much Amazon might make in sales. You know, if you lose $10 on a device, but then I end up buying however many, items from Amazon based on the fact that I now have a Kindle Fire. Well, there you go right there. Not to mention subsidies.
Huge opportunity for them. So it's going to be fun to watch the growth there and see what happens. Like you said, after the holidays, for the first few months, we'll be able to kind of tell if this device is going to be around for a while.
Absolutely. Really quick, before we get onto some of our other stories on the show, I want to quickly thank Netflix. They're our first sponsor of The Social Hour today. If you're not using Netflix, what are you waiting for? It's awesome. Netflix.com/twit is going to get you free 30 days of content. That means streaming movies, instant streaming movies, streaming TV shows, TV series that you haven't started or you need to catch up on. Okay, so here's the deal. So Netflix is the way that I watch the majority of my movies in my living room. I can go through my Apple TV or I can go through my Roku box. I'm lucky enough to have both, but maybe you just have one or the other, or you have an Xbox 360 or a Wii. There are so many different ways to watch Netflix content. I actually have a Sony Bravia TV that has a Netflix widget built in, so I have quite a few options. I like the Roku experience, but you've got options. That's a great start. But what's also nice about Netflix is it's very, very portable. So there's an iPad app. You can access Netflix via your Mac or PC. You can watch Netflix content so many different places. And if you're in the middle of a movie or a show or something like that, and for whatever reason you've got to stop, you can go ahead and start that up on another device later, and it will remember where you left off. So it's really kind of like having a library of movies and TV shows in your pocket. Again, netflix.com/twit. You can start a free trial for 30 days. No strings attached. You can watch as much as you can possibly watch in 30 days. And if you like it after that, then you can become a Netflix customer. I love it. I couldn't live without Netflix. And we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Gosh, I almost forgot, Amber. We got sponsors to thank.
I know. It's good, though. Thank you for all of their support. Now, Sarah, we've talked about the site FormSpring before on the show. I know that you have used it. It's really a Q&A website and really popular. I didn't realize how popular it was, especially, I want to say, among teens. I've talked to a lot of parents who said that their teens use the site on a regular basis. Well, it looks like they've just come out with a directory, which it seems it's kind of like a suggested users list, if I'm right.
Yeah, exactly. I read this originally on TechCrunch this morning that FormSpring is launching, not has launched, but is launching a favorites directory. So the idea is, as long as I'm understanding this right, is it's a little bit of, that SUL. Here are some of the high profile people that are on the network, which not only kind of gives it clout, I guess, because if you say, oh, Jerry Bruckheimer is on FormSpring, I really like his movies, I'll not only follow him, but it'll inspire me to be participatory as well. But it also gives you just a sense of who you can follow and who's interesting. I was not able to access favorites this morning because I believe it's either rolling out slowly or they haven't actually turned it on yet. If I go to formspring.me/favorites, I believe that is the direct link. And it does not... Oh, here we go. Yeah, no, it's live now. Here's Formspring Favorites. So I'm looking in the category of comedy. You've got comics and gaming, design and photography, fashion and beauty, movies and TV. If I go ahead and click on that. So I've got Taylor Lautner, for example. Okay, I'll go ahead and follow him. Why not? I actually don't. I don't know if we have anything in common or not, but why not? I'll go ahead and follow The Superficial. It's a gossip blog that I may or may not have found myself at every so often. Startups and technology. Okay, that's more my thing. I'm already following Ade. He's the CEO of Formspring. Julie Odell. We've got Jeffrey here. I'm actually in startups and technology. There really aren't many of us. We need more startups and technology people on Formspring. But this is great because I have actually, I hate to say it, but my Formspring use has gotten pretty stagnant lately. And that's mostly because of the not even 100 people I follow. And many of them are Facebook friends of mine, Twitter friends of mine, some, you know, for whatever reason in the same space as me. They do not use Formspring. Most of the people that were using it pretty regularly along with me don't anymore. So I feel like it's me and like three of my friends answering questions. It's pretty dead. Amber, you haven't really been using Formspring, have you?
Yeah, I never really sort of latched on to the site. I mean, I think it's a neat idea. And like I said, I think it has a certain audience. But for me, I felt like I got all of my social needs from services like Google Plus and Twitter and Facebook. I mean, that's already quite a bit to manage, right? You start throwing other things into the mix and all of a sudden it gets to be a little cumbersome to update them on a regular basis. So I think that's a problem that many of these social networks have, is that how do you get into this space and compete? Or maybe you don't. You know, it's the same argument as we just talked about in the tablet space. Maybe you just have your own niche audience and that's okay. You know, it's not Facebook's 800 million people, but it's a small little segment and you can survive on it. So they've been around for a bit though, right, Sarah?
Yeah, and I mean, they have, I mean, I think it's something like 30 million uniques a month. I mean, it's the engagement is high. I have found that as far as the questions that people ask me, and I do allow anonymous questions, and so part of it's my fault, but a lot of it is, it's just stuff I'm not going to answer. You know, it's either inappropriate or silly or it's in another language. It seems like there are filters that should be offered that aren't. I mean, I can block people. I won't get the question again or this, you know, question from the same person again, but sometimes it does feel like, oh, this is almost like an anonymous commenting blog mess.
Yeah.
And if I get turned off enough, I'm just not going to come back. And I fear that that's what's happened to a lot of our peers. But then again, that's Formspring obviously is trying to help engagement by letting us know who like-minded people or people that we admire on the network. And I wish them well. I hope that they can get folks like us back and using it, because I love the idea. The idea is great.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. Now, another fun idea. We've talked before on the show about LinkedIn and maybe how we don't use it on a regular basis, although we're present there. And, you know, I accept my friend requests on a regular basis. But the reality is I don't spend a ton of time there. There are people who do. And there are huge communities who maybe only use LinkedIn and not necessarily Facebook and Twitter and other sites. So they will love this app. It's called Lunch Meet. And it's not M-E-A-T. It's M-E-E-T. And it's an application to allow you to sign in with your LinkedIn account. And you can find other people in your LinkedIn community who might be available to meet up for lunch. It's almost like a dating app for business professionals, if you could call it that. So let's say you move to a new city or you're looking to network further. You can use the app, let people know when you're available, choose a specific location, and then get people to respond back to you who are currently within your LinkedIn network. So I love this idea because I sometimes ignore the LinkedIn community, but recognize that it is massive and a powerful group of people.
I like this idea too. And I say that not being very active on LinkedIn either. And I've actually made the mistake of there are people that I'm connected to on LinkedIn that I've never met. And, you know, you look at their bio and you think, well, we seem to have similar enough jobs, or they know some people that I know. It's kind of like Facebook, where I don't necessarily want to have lunch with that person if I'm in their town, because I don't know them well enough to know that we're going to have a nice conversation. But maybe that's just maybe timid, because I'm sure you can think of a couple of people. It's like, I have certain friends who will have a lunch for an hour with pretty much anybody. As long as they, you know, they feel like they have someone in common, or maybe they do that, have that common friend. It's like, this will be great. I mean, they are just social people. I mean, IRL social people. They love the idea of connecting, having meetups, that sort of thing. So I think that something like Lunch Meet could really take off. You just have to be friendly and want to have a potentially, I guess, awkward lunch.
Yeah, I do. I know lots of people as well, Sarah, though you're right, who in real life, they're totally comfortable just meeting up with people they've talked to you on Twitter and LinkedIn and other services. I tend not to do that on a regular basis, but I know people who've made really great friendships that way. So as long as you're safe and you have a decent sense of who you're meeting up with and do so in a public place, I guess have fun, because I do think the LinkedIn community is just so strong. I mean, there are people I meet all the time when I speak at conferences who would never go on Facebook or never go on Twitter, but they're entirely comfortable on LinkedIn. So it has really captured that business audience and those people who are just solely interested in professional networking. You know, they don't want to know all this personal stuff about people, but they want to be able to build up their own networks and meet other like-minded souls.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good stuff. So Lunch Meet, it's totally free.
The name is just funny because you think it's meat.
You do. It's, yeah.
Maybe that's just me.
Lunch Meet, as in M-E-E-T. Yeah, so that's free. It's in the iTunes App Store. We do have a little spotlight this week. And I was actually planning on talking about this on the last iPad Today, which was last Thursday, because it was a brand new app. It's called Mixel, M-I-X-E-L. And for whatever reason, I don't know, they were getting hit really hard. I could not use the service. And so in good faith, I could not recommend it on iPad Today. And I didn't want to trash something that was just too popular for its own good. But I've had a little bit of time to play around with it, and I don't know, the jury's out on Mixel. So I'm going to go ahead and launch it, explain what it does, and you guys try to help me figure out if it's cool or not. Okay, so this is the popular Mixel page. I'm just going to go ahead and click into one or two and give you a sense of what I'm looking at. Okay, so this is a picture that someone had created on Mixel. Now, it's hard to know if this is some sort of a layered picture, but this is what somebody named Koivin started out with. Okay, from that point on, someone named Ian Adelman did a little fancy, you know, changed the wings a little bit. Now the wings are coming out of her ears. We've got, I'm not really sure what's going on in the background, keyboard, glow sticks of some kind. Okay, interesting. Someone named Lexi liked this little mix up. It's almost like a remix type of a thing. And you continue on. Ian, a couple more tries. This is sort of like a pretty, I don't know, featherhead type of a thing. Then it starts getting kind of weird. Someone named Abel Paris gets into the mix. It's like this, it's starting to get a little bit psychedelic. And you get where this is going. Okay, now, this at this point, it's changed a lot. You see some of those original wings in the background, but now it's an avian mermaid, and it kind of gets silly from there. So when I first saw this, I was like, what is the point? Now, we're actually looking at something, this Mixel, and there are 34 of these. So there are 34 versions of something that started out as an original, you know, piece of art. This is actually, I think, a lot of this stuff is pretty creative. It's kind of cool looking. So, and I'm not necessarily, and you can go ahead and click on any of these and make them bigger. So I don't know if this is the best example of why I think Mixel might sort of be silly and pointless, because these are actually kind of nice. But I mean, okay, so let's go ahead and, it's going to want to load this. Darn it. See, this is the problem I had before. It gets stuck on stuff. Okay, here we go. We're back to popular page. Oh, come on, Mixel. All right, so while we're waiting for it to load, I'll explain. So, okay, so I could be browsing that all day, and you think, okay, I mean, is that really what to do with your time? But I can also create a Mixel of my own as well. I'm actually going to... See, this is the problem. I feel like I have had to hard restart this more than once. So I'll go ahead and, for the purposes of show and tell, I will. So let's go to my Mixels. So these are Mixels that I can create myself based on any photo that I either have on my iPad. You can pull in from Facebook. By the way, you do need to log on with Facebook to even get started with Mixel, and that's bothered people. If you look in the app reviews.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like
in
that,
iTunes,
right?
Yeah, people get really turned off by that if they only have one choice. But I created this really stupid Mixel, which is a picture of... it's a picture of MG and I when we were on our computers, and then I, you know, gave us like these really ugly, scary faces type of a thing. No one has said anything about my Mixel, so whatever. But the idea is that all of these entities are separate. So when I save something and I push it public, now you, Amber, could have any of these three elements to work with however you choose. So I'm pretty much giving up the rights. It's almost like a very creative / bizarre Creative Commons situation.
It's like,
here
it reminds me of being in Photoshop. You know, you have all the different layers and you can do all these different things, but allowing people access to all of those different parts, right?
Yeah, it's
interesting.
I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, some of the art I think, hey, that's kind of cool. Yeah, cool. But what are we all going to do with this stuff? I mean, I guess if I wanted to make this like my Twitter background page, I'd be glad that somebody went through the trouble, you know, or I could share it with somebody else if I really thought that they'd get a kick out of it. You know, you've got Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, email, Safari, or save to photos just right here. I'd go ahead and save that to photos. Maybe I'll make that my iPad background. Sure. Okay. But I'm a little bit at a loss as to who is going to go back to Mixel on a daily basis and be, you know, like a power user.
Sarah, I don't think you should say that because if you think back to when Twitter launched or YouTube, I remember people having conversations like, why would anyone do this? You just never know, right? But yeah, that's my gut reaction is why would anyone spend time to do this? But I guess it's kind of neat as far as the collaboration and people coming together and creating these quirky pieces of art. Like, would people actually buy them? I don't know.
I don't know either. I do know Mixel. It's if you want to know more about the service, it's mixel.cc is their website. And it is free. It's an iPad app. I don't think it would work very well on much smaller of a screen than an iPad anyway. And it's interesting. I'm not sure what to think, but there's a very good chance that what I showed off really appeals to you and you love the idea. And if that's you, then go ahead and download it. Play around. Send us your Mixels. Yeah, send us your Mixels.
Send us your Mixels and let us know. We can judge them. We can rate them. Although I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, we can. We can have a Mixel off. That's a good idea. Yeah. Send us your Mixels and we'll tell you how talented you are.
But don't use our photos, friends.
No?
Well, no, that would be funny, actually.
Just, just keep in mind we're very fragile people.
Exactly. Make Maybe use awful. Leo's.
Yeah, exactly. Use Leo's. He'll love it. I do. I think I should mention, I mentioned Gogobot at the beginning of the show as sort of a Trippy competitor. And we've obviously talked about Trippy on the show before. We had the founder on, about a month ago or so now. And because I'm planning a trip to Europe in much less than a month now, I just thought I would mention Gogobot as another sort of travel advice player in the space. And what is kind of cool about Gogobot is it does seem to, and I just hooked it up to my Foursquare account, but it does seem to integrate nicely with where you have geolocated yourself. So not only is it, hey, I'm, you know, MG actually already asked, I'm heading to Barcelona for a week in December for the first time. There's 46 responses from people who have tips. Hey, go here, don't go here. I liked this restaurant, so on and so forth. But let's say that I ended up in Barcelona and I'm checking in on Foursquare, for example, or in Facebook Places to a variety of tapas restaurants. Then Gogobot would record all of that information and that would it sort of go into my past itinerary. So I could pull up that information easily as not only just where was I, but to send to somebody else if they had a specific question about a place that I had been or were looking for my review. So I like kind of where all this travel recommendation stuff is going. Just thought I should show you guys just the general situation with what Gogobot looks like. And it's neat. It's kind of a, it's a crowdsourced effort. Trippy is a little bit cleaner as far as design goes, in my opinion. But GoGoBot may have more of the functionality that you're looking for. Camp New, or Camp No, however you pronounce it. Unfortunately, the Barcelona football soccer team isn't going to be in town when I'm there. Bummer! Or I would really like to do that. Thanks to whoever sent that tip.
Cool.
So that's GoGoBot. All right, Amber, let's move on. Before we get to some of our viewer feedback, want to thank Ford. They're our second sponsor of this episode of The Social Hour. And Ford's awesome. They are extremely technical. You think they're just a car maker, aren't they? Yeah, if you like robot cars, Wi-Fi connectivity with available sync and My Ford Touch, brought to you by Ford. What does that mean? It means that your car can become a Wi-Fi hotspot, which is pretty cool. You can actually see it in the 2012 Ford Focus, and you can learn more at ford.com/technology. So what you do is, driving down the road, you got some people in the car, you want to get an internet connection going, turn it into a Wi-Fi hotspot, you just have a little portable wireless access card from one of the wireless carriers. There's a little USB port located right in that center armrest console or the glove box. And you can plug that in. You can enable a password, so nobody passing you on the highway is going to be able to jack into your mobile hotspot. It's just the people that you want to be involved. Up to 5 devices, and you're in. It's amazing. I mean,
I've seen it in action. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, you have had a chance to play around a lot with this stuff, Amber. You and your family seem to go on a lot of road trips. I can't imagine that you would like life without a mobile hotspot once you actually have one.
No, you would not like it without it. I actually end up doing a lot of work in the car because usually I'm not driving. Chris is driving. So if you hook up a mobile hotspot like this, it's great. You know, you can get work done and keep emailing people, because if you're going on a road trip or you're stuck in crazy rush hour traffic as a passenger, you know that's a lot of time wasted. So it's nice to be able to log on.
Absolutely. So again, Ford Sync with My Ford Touch featuring Wi-Fi connectivity is available in the 2012 Ford Focus, some other models to come soon. And you can find out all about it at ford.com/technology. They put together a really, really interesting interactive site. Gives you a good idea of everything that Ford is doing to make their cars as futuristic as possible. It's really great. And we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right. Let's get on to some viewer feedback.
Yeah, it looks like we have a video, Sarah. Is that right? Did someone send us in a video?
Yes, we sure do.
Daredevil?
We don't know his name, so I'll just call him Daredevil. You'll see why.
Hi, Amber and Sarah. I was getting off to a gig, and I was wondering maybe you guys could maybe do a show about how we can use social media as musicians to hook up with our fans. Talk to you later.
Whoa.
Oh, jeez.
I think he said ship, you know. Ship.
Oh, of course.
It's a music
thing. As long as he was safe when he was driving and recording that.
Right. Oh, Daredevil, you so crazy. Hopefully, yes. Don't try not to send us videos when you're actually driving.
They just pull over.
Just not a good idea. Although yeah. I understand that was for comedic effect. So he didn't say whether he was a musician or some sort of a tour manager or what. But he's definitely in the music industry, and he was asking about our social media advice for those kinds of folks. I know I have a recommendation, Amber, but I thought that I would let you start.
Yeah, sure. There's a musician from Toronto. Her name is Lights. She uses Twitter and all these social media tools. You can follow her at twitter.com/lights. I'm a huge fan of her music. And she's probably one of the best that I've seen recently, who truly grew her audience totally grassroots style through using social media, particularly YouTube and Twitter and blogging and a bunch of other tools. And so I would kind of follow what she's done. You'll see how she really, really connects with her fans. You know, it is about promoting what she does, but also talking to her fans and sharing things that she likes and contributing to conversations. And so I think a really good example of someone out there who was fairly unknown and has really done quite well in the past few years. So her name is Lights, LIGHTS, and you can find her online and hopefully borrow some ideas from her.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know if people in the music industry, musicians, have to go about anything too differently than the rest of us. I mean, as you mentioned, this artist that you like so much named Lights is able to get the word out about what she's working on. She's talking to people about her new projects. You know, it's not a one-way conversation where she's just blasting out all of the time. And she's really cute too, so that doesn't hurt. You know, and she has a nice photo stream where you can, you know, get a sense of what she's all about. I love that. It's kind of what you have to do. I don't think you have a choice anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Sarah. It's really not any different than any other person who's trying to promote their brand and trying to promote what they do. It's all about connecting with people, having conversations with people, sharing with people, and just, you know, finding the right people who are within your community or expanding your community. And if you're persistent and you're good at what you do, I think, you know, within, you know, a certain number of months, you'll be able to actually see your fan base grow. So just keep at it and don't quit. Don't be a quitter.
Don't quit. No, not if you're in the music industry. You got to get used to rejection. I do have one website. Gosh, my stupid power cord just does not want to stay into my computer today. I have one suggestion for anybody who, let's just say you're a band, you have no social media presence, you're over the whole MySpace thing, don't blame you. And where do you even put together a website that's really easy and doesn't take very long? A friend of mine actually built something called OneSheet. That's onesheet.com. It's amazing, actually. OneSheet is a really cool idea. If anyone's familiar with About Me or has made an About Me page, it's very similar to that, where you're pretty much putting together kind of a splash page of everything that you're about. So let's go ahead and... I'm just going to show off, Paramore. Okay, so Paramore is obviously a rock band, very popular with a lot of people, and they've put together a one-sheet page. And so what's nice about it is they put together a nice little, this is a little background image. They've got a featured video. It's for a song called Monster. I'm not actually that familiar with Paramore, but it's the video that they kind of want to feature. There's a nice little handy iTunes link to buy. But then they've also got a bunch of other links up here. So you can go ahead and read what they've talked about recently on their blog, for example. You know, it's just a RSS feed. You can see what upcoming concerts you might be able to see Paramore at. They're actually using an app called Bands in Town. Doesn't look like they have any upcoming concerts because they're probably not touring right now. But if they were, you could go ahead and share if, you know, there was going to be like a fun Saturday night that you wanted to share with friends, or, you know, the ticket information would be here too. Obviously, they've connected Twitter to their account and YouTube videos and so on and so forth. What's nice about OneSheet is some of the stuff is obvious, but if I go back to the main page again, some of the services that I guess bands are using are not, they're not even really in my wheelhouse. For example, there's SK. I don't even know what SK is, so I'll go ahead and click on it. I think it's called Songkick. But it's like, okay, these are some social networks that might be really big in the music scene, but not necessarily in, you know, the geek scene. So I feel like I'm learning a little bit about this, and there might be a lot of musicians that are like, well, we don't really need an About Me page, but something like OneSheet is great for us because it's using the tools that we're using anyway, and it makes sense for our fans to go to a place like this. So if you're someone looking to get started in the space, it's really easy to set up an account. It might be something that's right for you.
I wonder, is MySpace still key for musicians? I mean, it was for so long.
Yeah, I think that the music side of MySpace was what lasted the longest.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know,
I think it's still around.
I think after a lot of us had abandoned MySpace, you would still see that artists would... be able to promote themselves via MySpace, and there were certain, you know, live concerts and that sort of thing. But, you know, I stopped paying attention to MySpace a while back. I mean, to the point where if there was a link, even if it was a music-based link, I just wasn't going there. And I figure, I'll find them somewhere else type of a thing. And maybe
when I go there, it's frightening, Sarah. It's a frightening experience to see.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's
junk like on the page.
Almost feels... You know, it's a dirty bit of MySpace snobbery, but I had to let go.
I agree with you. All right. Well, we have an email from Doug Hanna, who goes by Blue Squid Doug on Twitter. And he says that he has just found a really great tool that he thinks we might want to share on the show. It's called Tweet Sheet, and it measures responses on Twitter, but also has a lot of other neat features. It's available at Vizify.com. Sarah, are you using this?
Yeah, I am. And at first I was like, wait, you sent us a service that is actually in private beta. I was able to get in just fine, so maybe they just haven't updated their homepage. But it's Vizify, Vizify.com/tweet sheet. And what I did is I had to give it permission to access my Twitter data. It says, we don't store your password, that sort of thing. So if you're comfortable enough with allowing a third-party service like this to pull from Twitter's API, you get something that is actually kind of cool. Not only is it sort of a nice design here, but it gives me some pretty basic but interesting stats on my tweets. So, for example, we're now in November, and it gives me a sense that, well, you know, in the month of November, and November isn't over yet, but I'm tweeting a lot less than I was in, let's say, September. December, I sent 177 tweets. Of those tweets, 36 got a response. That's the little green area up at the top here. And you know, I need to get going here. Of my 88 tweets, my 88 tweets total of this month, very small amount of those got any response at all. Although I think that they're counting at replies in there, so that's sometimes you're not going to get a response to something in your at reply because you yourself are responding. That also accounts for retweets too. But then if you go ahead and scroll down a little bit, I actually thought this is kind of funny. It's easy enough to see who's retweeted your post, especially since Twitter activated the activity tab last week. We should talk about that too at some point. I'm still kind of getting used to how that works. But before that, you could see who had retweeted your tweets, but it was a little bit cumbersome. This is kind of nice. It looks like my most retweeted tweet ever was me complaining at an airport bar that the bartender didn't want to serve me the kind of beer that I wanted. He suggested Bud Light instead, and my feathers got all ruffled about that. It got 99 retweets. I had totally forgotten I ever sent that. That was like over a year ago. So I got a kind of a chuckle out of that. But you can look and just kind of keep scrolling so that I tweeted out a Chrome extension, 28 retweets. So it was kind of an interesting little walk back in time to see what was getting retweeted historically, you know, over the last year or so. Geographic impact. It appears that my impact is the greatest in California and the state of New York. Okay, well, I guess I just have a lot of friends in California and New York. And then best followers, you're actually on there, Amber, because you've mentioned me 8 times. And that's, again, I think you've mentioned me more than 8 times, so it must be within a certain period. But a few other people, some that I know, some that I don't know. Virgil, who's one of our chat room regulars, he's in there. As is Twit Live, but then Space Guy One, Rob, I don't know you, but thank you for being one of my best followers. So it just gives you a sense of who is mentioning you and why and retweeting you and that sort of thing. Then there's also favorite themes, which is a little bit silly because one of the themes I talk about all the time is Shabu, but that's probably because I went to Shabu Shabu last Friday, so I said Shabu twice in one tweet. I really don't talk about it very often. So this is, you know,
it's fun though. I like it.
Yeah, you might log in once or twice, look at some stats, get a little information, feel like you know a little bit more about your reach and who's following you. And it's easy peasy. So again, yeah, that's at Vizify.com/tweet sheet.
I actually signed up when we were talking. It only took literally like 30 seconds to work. So it's super fast and kind of slick. And I think it just gives you, like you said, just a sense of kind of what's effective in terms of what you're sending out. So you can do more of that and less of other stuff.
Yeah, I think also, I mean, getting retweeted 100 plus times is not really a goal of mine. It's nice, but some, obviously, depending on just the way that you're using something like Twitter, that might be a very specific goal of yours. I mean, you might have a bonus waiting for you from your boss if, you know, your company tweet gets retweeted a certain amount of time. Yeah. So this is a tool that could actually be extremely helpful just depending
on how Leo's not giving you a bonus, Sarah, if you get retweeted a lot?
No, I'm afraid not. He's not. Maybe he should, though.
Maybe he should.
Yeah. Actually, we'll I think he just wants people to watch our content.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, just watch the shows.
Just watch. That's all. That's all you need to do. All right. We love to get all of your feedback on the show. All you have to do is write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. You can record a video, preferably when you're not driving. Upload it and send us the link. And try to keep the video to 30 seconds or less. So short and sweet. We love getting videos, but please just be safe when you are shooting them.
Absolutely. All right. So you are on deck for Rad or Fad. But before Amber gets to that, I want to quickly thank Squarespace.com, our third sponsor on the show. And that's the blog service that I use. I love Squarespace because it's fast, it's easy, and everyone who puts together a Squarespace page, whether they make a custom theme and hack it all up, or they use one of the templates that Squarespace just provides off the bat, always has a really nice looking website. I promise it's like impossible to make something that looks like crap. You can take a tour over at squarespace.com and just get a sense of all the different ways that you can use it. You've got nice widgets where you can import a lot of data. I've actually really not been blogging so much lately, but I'm active on all sorts of other social networks like Flickr and Twitter, just to name a couple, where those are getting constantly updated on my Squarespace blog, so I don't feel like I'm just leaving it stagnant. So there's a blog module, includes import and export support for WordPress, Blogger, movable type, TypePad. So if you've spent a lot of time building up a presence somewhere else and you think Squarespace sounds great, but I'm just not going to start over, don't worry. That import tool, and again, export tool too, which is really nice of them. It helps sort of ease your mind about trying something different. Form builder, you can collect email addresses and other information for site visitors. I've put together a nice contact page on my blog so that you don't even necessarily need to know my email address. You can just write in a little form and contact me, and I get that forwarded to the email address of my choice. Like I said, social media buttons. You can connect website visitors to your networks on Facebook and Twitter or Tumblr or, you know, kind of whatever. Google Maps, that type of a thing. I mean, the list goes on and on. If you search through the examples area of Squarespace, you get a really good sense of who's building what kinds of blogs. Video podcasts, that's a really nice module that Squarespace provides. Writers, photographers, people selling really cool things that they made on Etsy. The list goes on and on. It is truly a blog or a personal website for just about everybody. That's at squarespace.com. And there is actually a special code, our special offer code, which is SocialHour11. All one word, SocialHour11, will give you 20% off for 6 months. That's a better offer than we've ever had on the show before. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's a great deal.
So if you were dragging your feet for whatever reason, drag no more. SocialHour11, get that 20% off for 6 months over at squarespace.com. And thanks so much for their support of our little show. All right, Amber, time for your Rad or Fad.
Okay, I have to warn you, if you are driving and you're listening to the show, please be cautious. Don't get too excited. This is a new augmented reality app, and it's from a company called Moose Jaw, which I've never heard of before. It turns out they're an outerwear retailer. They've developed an app for the iPhone, iPad, and Android devices that will allow you to see through clothing, so you can see models in, they're not naked, in bras and, you know, just in various stages of almost nakedness. So the app is causing quite a buzz, as I'm sure you can imagine, because with augmented reality apps like this, the thought that you can take up your phone and use the camera and actually view their catalog and see what's underneath their outerwear is kind of an innovative idea, I suppose.
I mean, are they selling undergarments or is...
No, I don't think so. They're just selling outerwear, as far as I understand.
So this is weird. Weird. I mean, I've actually, I mean, even though this is kind of silly, it's interesting how it works.
It's super cool. I mean, it is cool in the sense that you imagine taking your iPad up and they're showing this in a video that they have available, and you can take your iPad and you can point it at the magazine or the catalog, and if a woman's wearing a big parka, all of a sudden you can see she's wearing a fancy lace bra underneath. It's very gimmicky, I think, Sarah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's... a unique use of the technology, and clearly is going to get them a lot of buzz, I think. But I think it's kind of cool, but I think it's a fad. I don't know how sustainable this is. You know, I mean, are you going to, you're not really promoting lingerie. So I don't know. It seems like it's a one-off thing. That's my impression.
I think, yeah, my first reaction is that's kind of cool. How could we use this for something that's useful? You know,
yeah.
It's almost like this is a case study. Look, it works. And you say, okay, that's great. So if they're not selling lingerie, there's really no point. I mean, how many pages are you really going to flip through and do this before you're like, okay, I want to go do something else now? I like the idea, but yeah, I'm not sure how many, especially print catalogs. I don't even want print catalogs anymore, you know, because everything I can get online now. How many companies are really going to take advantage of something like this besides just that original gimmick? People will be talking about it for a couple of days type of thing.
But I should say that I don't think that Sarah and I are the target demographic. I'm just going out on a limb here. Yes, if there are men out there who think this is really cool, I would love to know. So you can let us know in all the ways we just mentioned on the show, because I'm curious and I haven't asked Christus or any other guy that I've talked to today, but I'd love to ask them, like, are they going to rush out and want to get their hands on this just because they think it's cool? I don't know. But like I said, maybe Sarah and I aren't the best judges on this particular rad or fad item.
Very possible. I did notice that they had some male models in the catalog. We hovered over one in the video that we showed, and he was in, I don't know, boxers and some suspenders. That didn't really do anything for me either. I just thought, okay, that's what you're wearing underneath your clothes, whatever. So I don't know. Maybe we're immune to how amazing this is. So if you're watching or listening and you think, well, if you're listening, you're probably really confused. But
maybe
if you're
we're
watching,
just boring, Sarah. Maybe we're just like, you know.
Maybe, yeah.
Who knows? But yeah, I think there could be some feedback coming our way about this particular augmented reality app.
If you can think of a case where this technology could be used for something of interest to the social community, the geek community, or anything in between, let us know. Because right now, all we've got is underwear, and we're just, I'm going to say fad.
I'm going to say fad too. It's a fad that will probably get a lot of attention. It's a good fad. If you're into marketing.
Right. Or undies.
Or underwear, lingerie. And now we have the weirdest segue. Well, maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe not, actually. So we do have a closing video. We don't actually do videos to close out our show every week, but it's always fun when we do. This is something that Amber picked. But so I guess Amber will say goodbye now and play ourselves out.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
We're pretty much at the end of the hour, so this worked out pretty well.
Worked out well. Do you want me to give a little tease to the video, or
yes,
should we just run it? So this video is called Clinton Foundation Celebrity Division in honor of the 10th anniversary of the Clinton Foundation, which of course is from Bill Clinton. This is his group that does a lot of great things in the world. This video was created with a bunch of celebrities who are trying to figure out a way to contribute to come up with a new campaign idea for the Clinton Foundation. So everyone from Kevin Spacey to Ben Stiller, and the list goes on. Actually graced this video, and it's a few minutes long, but hopefully we can just show a quick clip.
Absolutely. So with that, before we get into our video, that's it for this episode of The Social Hour. Remember, we are live on Monday mornings, my time, afternoons, Amber's time, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. If you miss any show, don't worry. Just hit us up at our website, twit.tv/TSH, where all of our episode archives live. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes or even YouTube. We put all our videos up on YouTube as well, if that's the way that you like to watch. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you next week.
See you guys.
All right, come on, guys. It's been 2 hours. We don't have anything. President Clinton called on us to use our celebrity creativity to brainstorm new initiatives to help his foundation do even more good in the next 10 years. He's going to be calling any second now. Yes.
First of all, thanks for calling on me. It's been a while. I have three words. Global Breathing Initiative.
Global Breathing Initiative. Keep talking.
Okay, well, we all know that the foundation has retrofitted buildings all over the world to reduce carbon emissions, but what about the people inside the building?
So you're saying What are you saying?
Every time we exhale, we release carbons into the atmosphere, right? So what if everyone in the world holds their breath for 1 minute every day?
I know they say there are no bad ideas in brainstorming, but that's a horrible idea.
Is it?
Please don't say anything like that again.